We're about to begin a new malacha. That's the malacha of Havara. And the truth is, we spoke a lot about Havara because we spoke about Kibui. Kibui was extinguishing, and now Havara is lighting. So we're going to move, though, into the malacha per se of Havara. And the truth is that most of what we're going to talk about tonight is not going to be Havara so much in terms of Hachos Shabbos, but more in terms of Hachos Yom Tov. But the introduction to the topic really begins through the vehicle of Hachos Shabbos. Let's begin with the very beginning. So the malacha of Havara is a unique malacha, is because it's one of the very few malachas that actually is mentioned explicitly in the Torah Shebichtav. Now, we know the Torah tells us, losasek malacha, the Torah uses the phrase malacha, and we have a tradition that the malacha means whatever was malachas ha-mishkan, and we have a tradition as to what malachas went into the mishkan. So we know that there are 39 malachas. That's not the issue, whether the malacha is linked to mishkan or not. What is the issue is that the Torah goes out of its way to single out the malacha of Havara, different from all the other malachas. The Torah says in Parshas Vayakol, lo sevara eish b'chomosh v'stecha b'yom HaShabbos. Now the truth is that there are a few other malachas here and there that are hinted to in the Chumash also being asur. The Torah speaks back in Parshas B'shalach about the preparation of the man. So the Torah says, eses she'tofu eifu v'eses tevashtu v'shelu, you have to bake the man and cook the man on Friday. Clearly indicating that you should not be doing that on Shabbos. So the Torah does already allude to the malachas of Dishol on Shabbos. The Torah mentions also the Charish of Akatsha Tishbos. It describes the issue of Charisha, of plowing, and Kosher Sheitzim, which is not even exactly clear which malachi violated. You have a little bit of a mention of Otzon and Pashas Viachos. You have a little bit of almost a smattering of different malachas that actually appear in the Torah Shebichtav itself. But the one that appears with absolute crystal clear mention is the issue of lighting a fire, well, kindling a flame, well, savar eish b'chomosh v'sech b'yom HaShabbos. So why is it that the Torah singles out this issue? What is it about Havara that makes it so unique? So the Gemara actually says that there are multiple dinim that are derived from the fact that this issue is singled out. The Gemara says, as an aside, that this also serves as the source that Eimanisha b'Shabbos, that Beis Din is not permitted to give an onish b'Shabbos Beis Din on Shabbos. If somebody's chayav b'Shabbos Beis Din, so even though normally we're supposed to punish the person as quickly as we can, once the Gemara Din is given, we're supposed to punish the person as quickly as possible. You're not allowed to be manish the person on Shabbos, because lo sevar eish b'chomosh v'sechem b'yom HaShabbos. A shreifa is one of the arba b'Shabbos Beis Din, so we derive from the fact that you can't make a shreifa from the Beis Din, you can't make the other Yisurim as well. There are other Rishonim who maintain that even other kinds of onshin, which are not Mises Beis Din per se, even other kind of onshin, such as Malkus, maybe other things that may not even be a malacha per se, may also be included in this issur, lo sevar eish. But again, that's not really the part we're going to talk about either. And there's another interpretation of Chazal about lo sevar eish v'chomosh v'sechem, which is probably the most relevant lamaisa for us, but that's not what we're going to talk about too much either. That's what it says in the Zohar. The Zohar says, lo sevar eish v'chomosh v'sechem, refers to the fire inside you, namely to getting angry. There's a special issur in the Torah to get angry on Shabbos. Even though you shouldn't get angry all the time, the Gemara says in the Masechah Shabbos that kolakois is kilo obid avedazara. The person gets angry, so it shows that he's worshiping himself, because he's so meshubit to his own anger, that as he's been obid himself, so lo yiyah b'cha elzar, v'lo seshach v'lo anecha, the Gemara comments on the pasuk, what's an example of an avedizar inside a person? His own anger. It's a person who can't control his temper. He's not like an avedizar. It doesn't mean when the Gemara has these statements that if you do certain avedizars, it's like an avedizar. It doesn't mean that he drinks up the wine. Anytime you see a guy get angry, you have to spill the wine. That's not what it means. The same way when the Gemara says, if you publicly embarrass somebody, it's it doesn't mean you're chayav bezin for that. It doesn't mean that you're a din of roide for that. It means it's a terrible avera. The Gemara will sometimes compare A to B to show you that avera A, which otherwise people may have taken lightly, has certain qualities, certain characteristics of B. So called kai skila v'dizar doesn't mean it literally. You're not chayav skila for getting angry, but it does have a certain shem, it's a little certain mash, a little hint of the need of avedizar. The Zohar says that in addition to the issue of getting angry all week long, there's a special issue of getting angry on Shabbos. That's what the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, that the Satan has free reign in the Jewish home on Friday afternoon. The Gemara says the sun is raking, it dances on Friday afternoon because it gets everybody angry at each other, because people tend to get angry when they're under stress. And if you study your own anger patterns or the patterns of those around you, you'll notice that the higher the stress is, the better chance that they're going to get angry. So generally there's a up in the stress in a from Jewish home on Friday afternoon, as you get closer and closer to left benching, so the stress level goes up. So as the stress level goes up, so the potential for anger goes up as well. What's even startling is that the Satan is so smart that the Satan knows that we're about to light Shabbos candles. When you light Shabbos candles, the Gemara says that ushers in Shalom Bayis. That was the eco reason, really, for the Shabbos candles, to enhance the Shalom Bayis in the house. When it's dark in the house, people are going to bump into each other. They're not going to be able to eat. They're going to be very uncomfortable. That's going to also add to the stress level. So candles, Neir Shabbos, are there dafka to lower the stress, dafka to make people more comfortable, make people more relaxed. There should be more of a Shalom Bayis, more of a peaceful peace and harmony in the home. So what does the Satan do? So he knows that the Shabbos candles are about to be lit, and he knows that that's his enemy. That's going to destroy him. So what does he do? So he makes the Shabbos candles the greatest. That's his final stand. He makes everybody get into fights over lech benching. That's the number one the trigger of stress in the Jewish home. When you hear that scream out of the shower, what time is lech benching? And that triggers off a whole series of responses of, what? Don't you know, lech is in 3 minutes from now, and where are you, and where would happen, and how come this kid's still doing this kid's doing that, and the husband's not even home yet, and everyone's in a total chaos. What we've noticed, and as I'm sure everyone has noticed the same thing, that the stress and the chaos, it doesn't matter whether Shabbos starts at 8:30 or Shabbos starts at 4:10. It's the same level of stress. So whatever it is, so the Sata knows that we're about to light the Shabbos candles, so he makes such a tararam about lech benching to drive everybody crazy. But then when we finally light the candles, then everyone's fighting with each other, so he won. So the Aveda and Erev Shabbos is to go into Shabbos in a calm mood, because you go into a stressful mood and you get angry at each other, then it's going to defeat the purpose. That's what the Zohar says. Well, Sama'a Erev Shabbos said we have a Shabbos. But we're not talking about that either. So far we've identified the two topics we're not talking about. We're not talking about Tzreifas Paskayin, and we're not talking about getting angry. But what are we talking about? We're talking about the Gemara Masechta Shabbos in the seventh parak. The Gemara asks the question in Nigla, not in Nistra, Nigla. Why does it say, why does the Torah single out Havara from all the Malachas? The Gemara quotes a Machlekes HaTanoim. What was it about Havara that is different? But the Gemara quotes one opinion that says that Havara L'chalek Yotzos, that the goal of signaling out Havara is not because Havara is any really different. It's really the same as all the other Malachas. But the Torah wanted to mention one Malacha by name. It truthfully could have mentioned any of them. The Torah could have just as easily said, Lo Savashlo B'Shabbos, Lo Tivnu B'Shabbos, Lo Tiktru B'Shabbos. Any one of the 39 Malachas would have sufficed. But the Torah wanted to single out one. Why? Because otherwise we would have had a misunderstanding as to how many karbonas chatases you would have brought if you would have done multiple malachas. There's a general rule in halacha that when you violate an isser kares, so if you violate something that would normally be an isser kares b'mezid, so you bring a karbon chatas, you bring a special karbon to atone for that chet b'shegeg. And you generally bring karbonas per averis that you violated. So here the Mishnayos and Maseches Kriso spell this out precisely. What does it mean? Let's say a person does multiple averes b'shogeg. They sit down and they have gezayis of chaylev, not realizing that it was chaylev. And they have a gezayis of dam, not knowing that it was dam. And it's on Pesach, they had a gezayis of chometz. And the guy didn't know what it was for. He forgot everything. He forgot dam, chaylev, chometz. And he did multiple averes. So he brings multiple karbanos. He means multiple karban chatzos per aver. Let's say it's on Pesach and he eats a slice of pizza, and then he has a piece of challah, then he has a bowl of cereal, then he has a piece of chametz, a cake, and he has a bowl of noodles. He violated chametz one time after another, after another, after another, another. The Gemara says that that's all the same of Aveiros. One is of eating chametz. So you just bring one chatas per that whole group of Aveiros. There's one Tana that says that tamchuyin mechalkim, that if they're prepared differently, so the fact that they're different foods, so that's enough to be called a separate aveira, so to speak. So according to one Tana, if you had a bowl of pasta, then you had a piece of cake, and then you had a slice of pizza, then you would have to bring multiple chatas. But putting that Tana aside, the aveira itself is considered to be just the same exact aveira, and therefore we pass an halacha, you would just bring one chatas, no matter how many times you ate chametz. Unless there was a zikaron in the middle, unless you have what's called chiluk halamas. Hela means that you forgot. So let's say I forgot that it was Pesach, and I ate a slice of pizza, and then I remembered it was Pesach, then I forgot an hour later again, and I have another slice, and I forget again. So, and I remember again, each time that I remember, if you remember, yeah, that's considered to be a separate halama, separate nechayim. But if everything is all about halam echad, then you just bring one chatas. The Gemara raises the question, what's the din about malacha Shabbos? What would the din be if a person does multiple malachas on Shabbos? Is that considered to be just, it's the same aveir, it's the same thing, what's the difference? Or do I say, no, that each malacha is almost considered to be like a separate aveir? So here the Gemara says, sometimes, depending on the intricacies of kavanas and halamas and shkagos, things like that, you could have a situation where you have to bring chatas per malacha. So in theory, a guy on Shabbos, he forgot that there's an issur of chayvish, he forgot there's a ray, he forgot there's kaitza. He didn't do a good job when the Rebbe taught him the lamatas malachas. He didn't remember too many. He remembers like the three out of malachas. So he did 36 malachas on Shabbos, b'shagig, each one forgetting that he's not supposed to be doing that. So the Gemara says that I would have thought that that's just one malacha. That's like even comments multiple times. So kamash b'lon, no sabarish, b'chomash v'seichem, that each one is considered to be a separate aveira. And therefore you have to bring 36 or whatever number of malachas that you forgot. Up to 39, 139 is going to have to bring, but up to 39 malachas, then you would have to bring a chatas for each malacha. And that's that halacha is derived from the Sibarish Chavash Rosef. That's what's called Havara Lechalik Yotzes. So according to that Tana, there's nothing unique about Havara. Havara was when Rav Marshall decided, for whatever reason, to pick that malacha, but any one of the malachas could have taught us the same lesson. And then the Gemara quotes another Tana. The first Tana is Rabbi Nasan, and then the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yasi and disagrees. Rabbi Yasi says, no. That when the Torah singles out Avar, it singled out Avar for a very, very specific reason, to teach me something strange that I never would have figured out. Avar is Lelav Yotzos. The Torah singles out Avara, Davka to emphasize that Avara is not really Chayav Skila. Avara is actually less serious than all other Malachas. That there were 39 Malachas, and all the Malachas were Chayav Skila. The Torah says, the Chayav Skila, and then Chayav Misa, Chayav Kurs, etc. And one of those 39 that the Torah singles out by saying, no, it's the lav yotzos. It's only a lav. If you do havara on Shabbos, you're not chayv skila, you're not chayv koris, you're not chayv chatas for shegig. You chayv a lav in the Torah. Lo savara eish b'chol shoseh b'yom Shabbos. So according to that Tana, havara is radically different. It is so radically different in the coolest sense, in the most lenient sense. This is really counterintuitive. If you would ask most people, which is the most lenient of all the malachas and Shabbos? If I give you a choice between, let's say, borer and driving a car on Shabbos. Basically, guy, taking out watermelon seeds versus driving a car. I didn't say taking out watermelon seeds. It's really borer. That's got to go back to the borer shoe from 3 years ago. But let's say something that's awesome in a Torah Mishum borer, that or striking a match. You're crazy, Rabbi. Come on, striking a match. How can you get mochel Shabbos? That's like the worst of the worst. So according to one Tana, it's not true. According to Rabbi Yossi, it's only a lav in the Torah. And he says, mutter, it's only a lav. Whereas if you play there, that's in a skila, that's a serious, serious stuff. I had him on Bayer only because right before Shabbos yesterday. So, two shilas. One was talking about complicated, one was talking related to Havar a little bit. It was a complicated driving hospital. Somebody had COVID and was coming out. That convoluted a scenario which involved the Shavanista Skila. And then it was loaded with Kuch Nefesh, with Skila, was a nice look. And then somebody called me about a Burr Shaila. So I laughed when they called me. I said, oh, what a pleasure to get Burr Shailas again. And then I said, I don't want you to think the Burr Shailas are last. The Burrs are also Skila. But somehow, I said to them, tell the person to relax. Tell them not to do the Shabbos. We'll worry about it. I don't have the head right now. I have the Shabbos. But the according to Rabbi Yossi, I did the exact opposite. I was totally wrong. According to Rabbi Yossi, I should have said, the guy's calling about driving the car. Man, what's a var between friends? It's only a lav. The buyer, that was the real McCoy. So I felt like everybody else, like a conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom is something about driving a car hits you is more of a chil shabbos. So anyway, they're both chil shabbos. Back to the story. So according to Rabbi Yossi, the driving the car, the var, whatever, striking the match, is terrible. This is the right of but it's a lot. It's not just a skill, not just a curse, not just a chatas b'shem. So how do we pass in halacha? So we unequivocally pass in against Rabbi Yossi. So not any shape or form do we follow the view of Rabbi Yossi. We pass in that Havara L'chal gets us, and therefore Rabbi Yosef Shita is almost not relevant for us. I say almost. Everything is almost. Is it almost? Nevertheless, there may be something about Rabbi Yosef that's absolutely critical for us to analyze and can impact potentially on us halach l'maisa. There's a Rashi in Maseches Ksubis, where Rashi explains what the principle of Elo Elo Dibra Lokim Chayim means. The Gemara says it in a few places that you have two different opinions and they seem to be radically different from one another. You want to say, no, Elo Elo Dibra Lokim Chayim. These are both the words of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Well, that's a big problem. How can it be? How can the Rosh Hashanah say two things? The two things are different from one another. How can it be both Elo Elo Dibra Lokim Chayim? So there's a Machlokes Rishonim, just what that phrase means. So Rashi and Ksubis explains that Elo Elo Dibra Lokim Chayim means that the reality is that in this particular shaila at hand, there's only one right answer. You can't have two correct answers that are contradictory. There's only one correct answer to this particular scenario. But scenarios are so different from one another. There are so many nuances. You can have two cases that you change one, like minor, mashu, it's a different picture, it's a different ballgame, it's a whole different world. So comes Rashi and explains that anytime there's a shita that's arrived at by Tana, by Meir, and you have a Rishon, you have somebody who's giving you a Torah-based svara, so there's so much truth in that one shita, even if it happens to be a Charek Echlos Ako, we don't pass like that shita. So the Charek Echlos Ako, we really assume that this is not the quote-unquote correct answer to this case. There's so much truth in that shita that we can use it so often to extrapolate from, to pasuk other things. So we should never, ever, like Machaber and say, we don't pasuk like that sheet, so it's meaningless. Well, no, Eilu Eilu Elokim Chayim. There is so much Divrei Elokim Chayim in each and every sheet. That's Rashi's understanding of what Eilu Eilu means. So the Ritva, in the beginning of Eiruvin, quotes a different understanding of the Gemara. The Ritva says, Eilu Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim means that these are the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the sense of that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed the Torah, gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, so we explain to him that there are going to be different ways of coming to different conclusions. There are certain things that are agreed upon by everybody. Those are the dinim that are Tosh B'Chsav and the Halach Moshe Mesinai, the Purush Mekubal Mesinai, the basic standards that's the given. And then every time a new shaila comes up, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, there are 70 svaras to say Lakuva, 70 svaras to say Lachumra, 70 svaras to say also, say Mutta, Potta, Chayim, Tami Tor, that you have a lot of these different... A lot of these different possibilities exist, and they're all potentially right. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell the Beis Din Shebechol Dor V'Dor to be Mechariah, that Lo B'Shemayim, the Beis Din will decide which is going to be the practiced halacha in this world, this time and place. But it does not in any shape or form mean that the other Shita is not correct. The other Shita is different, like Yimchayim, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, this is a valid answer in Torah. So then the Ritva throws his hands up at the end and he says, and then there's the third interpretation of Elo Elo, that he says, Zapi Hasoi, says it's a secret, it's the world of mystery, of the world of Kabbalah, and so he doesn't bother telling you what it is. So we're not privy to what the third approach is. But getting back to Rashi, so Rashi Ksuba says that when you have a Shita, that even though we don't necessarily pass like that Shita, don't negate it, don't ignore it, because there could be so much that's relevant from it. So this is a perfect example of that Rashi Ksuba is. Rabbi Yossi Shita is not accepted by the Rambam, not accepted by Allah. We don't follow Rabbi Yossi Shita. But after B'chein, there is so much in Rabbi Yossi that may impact on us in the world of Allah. So it's Kedai. It's always Kedai, even if it would have impacted us. It's Talmud Torah. But the Taka does impact us. So Kavachayna, we have to spend some time learning it. So what is the significance of Rabbi Yossi Shita? So there's a Tesis in Psachim, and that Hamid Beis that opens up our eyes. We're learning at the beginning of Pesachim now in Kol HaBoker. We're not quite up to the sugya. We'll bump into the sugya. It'll be a chazar for us, and depending on the pace that we go, either weeks or months, depending on how slow we go through the next couple of sugyas. But it's coming around the bend, the top of Daf Hamad days. So Taisus has a comment, a little bit very cryptically in Pesachim Daf Hamad days, and a little bit more in Masechet Beitza, where Taisus alludes to the following. Taisus says that there is a whole discussion that already appears in the Rishalmi about what's the status of lighting fires on Yom Tov. Now, I'm not talking about the issue that appears in the Mishnah Beitz about rubbing two sticks together or striking a match. That's called the Motzi Eish Min Ha'Eitzim Min Ha'Avonim. That is for sure prohibited on Yom Tov. That's no question. But that's most probably only a prohibition in the Rabbanim for a variety of reasons. We'll talk about this a little bit later on. But with the Araisa, that notion of you can't strike a match doesn't really exist. With the Araisa, if you can light a fire from another flame, you can light it from itself as well. So why is lighting fires mutter? Why is our starting point? Why is our baseline for lighting fires being mutter? The answer is because you light a cook like yonder, the Torah says, so you light a cook, so then lighting the fire is also a chol nefesh. So I want to light up the fire in order to make my barbecue and light my fire to cook my pot of soup. So that's all a chol nefesh. So that I understand. The fact that you're allowed to do a chol nefesh on yonder, that's like, you don't need a mishnah tayin, it's a pasuk chumash. But there is another principle in Hilchos Yontif. It says mitoch shehutra letzorech u'dinami shelo letzorech, that just as you're allowed to do certain malachas on Yontif for tzorech hachol nefesh, you're allowed to do them for other purposes as well. So Tosfos Shita and Beit Zafi Beis happens to be, not everyone agrees, but Tosfos Shita is, it has to be a tzorech yom ktas. It has to be some kind of a purpose for Yontif. But that's what Tosfos says. You're allowed to push a baby carriage in Yontif. You can carry a Lulav on Yontif, you carry shofar on Yontif. You can't just not pick up sticks and stones, minatara on Yontif for no reason. That would be called a tzor shelo tzor chlal. So there is a Yishalmi that raises a question in Maseches Beitza. What if I want to light a candle for absolutely no purpose? There is nothing to be gained by lighting. Why am I lighting it? It's what's called the ner shel batola. I'm not cooking with the fire and I'm not reading by the fire. It's not keeping me warm. I am just simply lighting a fire for whatever mishigas I have, but it's not any legitimate tzerich whatsoever. It's no tzerich ayom kiuzet. What's the story? So the Yerushalmi quotes machlokes about this. Yerushalmi quotes one opinion that says you're not allowed to do it. One opinion says you are allowed to do it. And Yerushalmi never explains us what the issue is. What's going on? Should it be? Should it not be? What's going on? So Tosfos, a little bit in Sochem and then a little bit more in Beitza, explain what's going on in Yerushalmi as follows. The starting point in all of Hilchos Yontif is Ein ben Shabbos leYontif, Ela Echol Nefesh Bavad. That's what the Mishnah says in Maseches Megillah. So whatever is Echol Nefesh is okay. Whatever is covered by Mitoch is also okay. So let's say you're allowed to carry food on Yontif, Mitoch, Shehutra for food, it's Shehutra other Tzrachim as well. So Tosfos and Beitza claims it has to be Tzrach HaYoyim. Again, you can push the baby carriage and you can carry a Machzor and you can carry Sefer Torah and you can carry the Lulav, the Shehutra. Those are all Tzrach HaYoyim and those are all okay. Even though you're not eating the lulav, you're not eating the shofar, you're not eating the sefer Torah, those are all right. Those are all covered by mitzvah. So if you cover that, if you carry that over to avot, it should be the same thing. That if there's a tzarech hayom, let's say you want to read by it, or you want to carry to keep it warm, or whatever, some other kind of big tzarech hayom, so that should be okay. I have no qualms, I have no hesitations with lighting candles, lighting fires, and you don't have to tzarech hayom. But Yerushalmi quotes the possibility of even shalom tzarech hayom is mutter. What could that possibly be based on? The Taisa suggests it's based on a totally different story. That's based on Rabbi Yossi Shita. Rabbi Yossi says that Havara is lalav yotzos. Havara is not chayav skila on Shabbos. So now Taisa makes a tremendous leap of faith. Taisa says, if you're not chayav skila on it, it's not really a malacha. Malachas carry with them skila. And if there's no skila, then by default, by definition, it's not called a malacha. Taisa says a startling thing. Taisa says, according to Rabbi Yossi, you have to count again. How many malachas are there in Shabbos? According to Yossi, there are 38 malachas. The quorum of 39th is not a malacha. Havara is not a malacha. We're learning through the malachas now. According to Yossi, the Shia Shemiyoba, we're talking about Havara. Havara is not on the syllabus. It's not a malacha. The Torah says you're not allowed to do it. So Torah explains, just because you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, doesn't mean it's a malacha. There are Isurei Shabbos, Shalei B'Teres Malacha. So there are two different sets of prohibitions on Shabbos. We're not talking about Isurim D'Rabban, Muktzah. That's a different world. We're talking about, even in the Torah world, there are the Malachas, there's the Chayri, Zerei, Koytzim, Amr. And again, each one of the Malachas has toldos to it, has derivations to it. Anything that's close enough to the Av, we need to find that in a whole other story. But whatever's close enough to the Av is called a Malacha. So there are Isurim B'Teres Malacha on Shabbos. And then there are Isurim, other Isurim on Shabbos. Shalom B'Teres Malacha, the Marshal. I'll just give you a quick Marshal. To go out of the Tchum, but to some opinions, walking a certain distance on Shabbos may be Nisa Deraisa. Malacha it's not. Skila it's not. Chorus it's not. Chatas it's not. So nobody says that Tchumin are Malacha. They're Isurim Shabbos, Shalom B'Teres Malacha. So now Tosfos comes up with the grand finale, with the Bichid. Tosfos, When we say that whatever you can't do on Shabbos, you can't do on Yontif, except for Echol Nefesh, what does that mean? So Tosfos suggests that means is all the Isurei Melacha on Shabbos carry over to Yontif. It does not mean that Isurei Shabbos per se carry over to Yontif. It doesn't mean that any and every activity that's off limits on Shabbos is off limits on Yontif. There is no such statement in Chazal. There is no such halacha. What it means is whatever melacha can be done on Shabbos, it says losasach melacha on Shabbos, and it says kumlech losasach on Yontif. The melacha, you can't do whatever melacha you can't do on Shabbos, you can't do on Yontif, with the exception of Echol Nefesh, and again Echol Nefesh Kasher. We talk about that whole subset, this whole mini group of the melachas that are included in Echol Nefesh. But short of Echol Nefesh, melacha Shabbos are also on Yontif. Isuri Shabbos are not also on Yontif. It says Tosfos, according to Rabbi Yossi, it'll be a tremendous nafkamina between Havara and everything else. Havara on Yontif is mutter, says Tosfos. Mutter. It's not mutter because of Echol Nefesh. It's not mutter because of Mitoich. It's mutter because it was never lost in the first place. The best way to be mutter is never being lost in the first place. So it's not also because it's not also. It never was also. That's what the Yerushalmi means. Neshama Tov is mutter according to some. Now, according to Tosfos, obviously, we can't paskin like that in Rishami. We can't paskin that a Ne'er Shabbatol is mutter, because if that shita that says Ne'er Shabbatol is mutter is basing themselves on Rabbi Yossi's view, and Rabbi Yossi's view is rejected by Lacha, then that application is clearly going to be rejected as well. So even though the Rishami is going to have to be rejected according to Tosfos, and we are going to have to paskin that Ne'er Shabbatol is also minatar and yontif, but Tosfos opened up the world for us, because there may be other Isurei Shabbos out there, like we just mentioned, and maybe a bunch of others, maybe a whole group of Isurei Shabbos that are Isurei Shabbos, Shalom B'Torah Melacha. And if we can identify those Isurei Shabbos, Shalom B'Torah Melacha, and follow Tosfos' reasoning, and then the result will be that the Mutter and Yontif, that's going to be important. That's already something for us to be familiar with. That's going to impact us, the Halacha. So the particular case of Tosfos is not, I shouldn't say it doesn't interest us, literally everything interests us, but it doesn't interest us lahalacha because we don't accept Rabbi Yossi. But other things that are Isurei Shabbos, Shalom B'Torah Melacha, Tosfos' equation may be right. That may be in Ochanami, Yom Tov Tacha parts ways from Shabbos. So what are some of these examples of these up in the air examples? So we mentioned quickly one of them was the issue of Tchumen. So Tchumen, what's the story? Is Tchumen going to carry over to Yontif or not? So it's very, very hard to prove the answer to that question, because everybody agrees that Tchumen are also in Yontif. You don't need me to tell you that. The Mishnayis and the end of Masechet Beitzah say it black and white. There's an issue of Tchumen. Whatever you can't do on Shabbos, you can't do on Yontif. But it's still not clear, are those Yisurim Deraisa, or those Yisurim Derabbanan? Just because, practically speaking, you can't go out of the Tchum on Yontif, that may not be a proof positive that's an Issur Deraisa. So our Shaila is still open. We still want to know what would the answer be. Would Tchumen apply on Yontif min HaTorah? It's important for us to know what's Deraisa and Derabbanan. It's important. There are halacha differences between Deraisa and Derabbanan. What's the difference? Is Tchumen an Issur Deraisa? Is Tchumen an Issur Derabbanan? So it's a very loaded question, because it's hard for us to know, is Tchumen an Issur Deraisa and Yontif? We're not even sure it's an Issur Deraisa and Shabbos. So we have to first prove that it's an Issur Deraisa and Shabbos, and knowing that it's at least also a Derabbanan and Yontif, and then try to figure out, is it Deraisa, Derabbanan and Yontif? So that makes our mission is becoming more complicated. So we have to take almost like three steps back. Again, we're put, no pun intended, but keep our far on the back burner. We're definitely still talking about Avara. We're still interested right now in lighting fires. We want to know, is Avara a Malacha, not a Malacha, L'chalek, Lav, Yontif, not Yontif? It still concerns us. But we're taking just a step back for a minute to study almost a parallel type of an Isser. An Isser that's Asur and Shabbos, but not B'Torah's Malacha, does it carry over to Yontif Minotur? So let's just get a quick introduction to Tchumen, just be able to appreciate how this plays out in terms of our discussion. So there's a very, very famous Machlokes HaTanoim between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanon about whether the shear of 2,000 amos is an issur d'oraisa or not. We know the Mishnah tells us explicitly throughout Maseches Erevin, you're not allowed to walk more than 2,000 amos on Shabbos. Now, when I say 2,000 amos, that means from the point that officially is your end, wherever you are, it's called Kona Shvisa. If a person's out in the middle of the forest, he's Kona Shvisa where he's standing. So those Dalet amos around him is his Makom Shvisa. Then he counts 2,000 amos in all directions, and that's as far as he's able to go. However, if he's in a city, so then his Kiryat Shvisa doesn't begin until the end of the city. So whatever's part of the city limits, those are that's still part of his Dalet amos. His 2,000 amos only begin to tick off after he exits the city limits. Now, that gets very, very complicated. That's probably the hardest part of the Maseches Erevin. One of the hardest parts of Erevin is the fifth paragraph of Erevin, which discusses how do you calculate ends of cities and beginnings of cities. It's very, very complicated. Tzidik and Bergenfield may be different municipalities, maybe different garbage pickups, maybe different snow removals, but luckily they're the same city because houses just lead one right into another. So it's really the layout of the houses that halakhically will determine whether something is one city or not. The way our towns and cities are, many of them are just literally one leads into another. So you can have a very, 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 very long way to go before you technically begin to count off your 2,000 amos. That's why 99% of the time, most of us when we're home for Shabbos, we don't even think about Tchumen because we're just one big city. The only time Tchumen starts to be on a radar screen is you go out to the mountains and Shabbos in the middle of nowhere. And it's really happened a lot because you have a lot of these yeshuvim and places that are somewhat removed from one another. So then you can start to run into much more serious Tchumen issues. But again, the din is that everyone agrees you're not allowed to walk 2,000 amos from whatever your magic point is. So there was a machlekes Rabbi Akiva in the Rabbanon. Is that an issur d'oraisa? Is that an issur d'rabbanon? So Rabbi Akiva in the fifth paragraph of Erevin has a very, very complicated drasha. 2,000 amos from the Ari Halavim, it says 2,000 amos there, it says Mokom here, it says Tchumen, it tells us an issur d'oraisa of going 2,000 amos. The Rabbanon say the whole thing is not true. The whole thing is only an issur d'rabbanon. So there was a further machlekes Rabbi Shainim within the Rabbanon. We don't follow Rabbi Akiva. Within the view of the Rabbanon, did the Rabbanon deny Tchumen d'oraisa like Gamrei? The whole institution of Tchumen Hakol Mikol Kol Zonim in the Rabbanon? Or did the Rabbanon say no, Rabbi Akiva's number of 2,000 is not correct? But there is a number d'oraisa. There's a magic number d'oraisa. What is it? Not 2,000. What it is the size of Machane Yisroel b'Midbar. Because the Torah says, Yetish M'Koymer meant the entire Machane. What was the size of the Machane Yisroel? Yud Beis Mil by Yud Beis Mil. That is significantly more than 2,000 amos. 2,000 amos is 1 mil. That's 12 mil by 12 mils. That's a much, much longer trip. So let's say it takes first to walk about one mil. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes, something like that. So Yud Beis Mil is going to be a good 3-hour walk or something. It's a significant thing to walk out of your boundaries. It's past the point in order to be an issur d'oraisa. So that's a big machlekes that we showed him within the Rabbanan, who disagreed with Rabbi Akiva, is Tchumen d'oraisa at all. So we have almost three possibilities. You have Rabbi Akiva who says, Tchumen of 2,000 amos is d'oraisa. You have one group of Rishonim who say that nothing is d'oraisa within the Rabbanon. And you have the middle ground, which is the Rambam Shita, that 2,000 is the Rabbanon, but Yud Beis Mil would be d'oraisa. So how does this impact our Shaila? How do we have any Raya? So what we really have to do is find within those views that there is such a thing of Tchumen d'oraisa, how does that play out on Yom Tov? And depending on what the answer to that question will be, if we find the existence of Tchumen d'oraisa and Yom Tov, then we've proven that even the Isure Shabbos, Shalom Atos Malacha, can apply on Yom Tov. If not, then the answer is no. So again, we're spending a lot of time within Havara invoking Rabbi Yossi's model that Havara is not really a Malacha, which is not the way we paskin. We paskin that driving the car is at least as bad as the watermelon season. It's a real Issur d'oraisa. It's a real, everything is an Issur d'oraisa. It's a real Issur skila. It's a real Malacha. It's a real Makoy. Well, the halacha, we have no hesitation whatsoever. It's an absolute issur skila. Havara is out of the question. However, it's still critical for us to analyze the VLC because it could impact on Tchumen, it could impact on other things. Hopefully, it's next week. We'll try to finish up the yonta part of the sugya before we go back to the Shabbos proper part in terms of the malachas of our itself. Hopefully, that's next week. We'll